This is The Guardian.
Today on Black Box, two visions for the future of AI. Why humanity may be doomed, and why that may be an overreaction.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is a story about the end of the world, and it starts with a joke. About 2 years ago, the scientist Geoffrey Hinton, one of the godfathers of AI, was working at Google, tinkering with a program most people haven't heard of.
There's a model in Google called Palm, P-A-L-M.
It was basically a Google version of ChatGPT, never released to the public. It was just research. And Hinton was checking it out when it did something that terrified him.
Palm could explain why jokes were funny. Not all jokes, but quite a few of them.
Here's one of the jokes it could explain. It's someone saying, I was going to fly in to visit my family on April 6th. And my mum said, oh great, your stepdad's poetry reading is that night. So now I'm flying in April 7th. I know, not a very good joke. But the point is, when you asked Palm 2 why this joke was funny, it could tell you.
The joke is that the speaker's mother is trying to get them to go to their stepdad's poetry reading. But the speaker doesn't want to go, so they are changing their flight to the day after the poetry reading.
Hilarious. To Hinton, though, this was really frightening. He has a really good sense of humor. And to him, that's something innately human. To get a joke, you need to understand so many nuances of language, human nature, how people think. It told him these things he had helped to create, they had crossed a barrier.
And I'd always sort of, just for myself, use that as a criterion of whether these things were really getting to human levels of understanding, that they didn't just understand language literally, they understood why a joke was funny. So maybe we're much closer to human level intelligence than I'd thought. Maybe we're not 30 to 100 years away. Maybe we're only 5 to 20 years away. I was always worried about things like fake news, corrupting elections, things like surveillance, things like battle robots, things like AI replacing jobs. But that's when I got really scared about the existential threat.
In that moment, Hinton realized the technology he'd helped bring to life was becoming a catastrophic success, getting smarter, quicker than he ever expected. And that was going to be a problem.
That they would get a lot smarter than us and they would take over.
But Geoffrey Hinton was late to this party. Someone had got there much earlier, 2 decades earlier. And tried to warn the world. The first episode of Black Box was about the godfather of AI, the man who spent his career trying to bring machines to life. This final episode is about Hinton's shadow, the godfather of AI doom, a guy who spent his entire career trying to kill this technology before, he says, it kills us all. And who now thinks it might just be too late. From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. This is Black Box, Episode 6, Shut It Down.
By the year 2030, there'll be computers that can carry out the same amount of functions as an actual human brain.
But humanity is accelerating into a future that few can predict.
Well, is artificial intelligence out of control?
Open the pod bay doors, please, pal.
You've spoken out saying that AI could figure out a way to kill humans? How could it kill humans?
I'm sorry, Dave.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
We've come quite far. Stop. We need to rethink. We need to rethink.
Eliezer Yudkowsky grew up in an Orthodox Jewish household in California. He never went to school. He was educated at home.
I remember being pretty studious, much more wrapped up in my parents' book collection than the rest of life, really.
But the kinds of things Yudkowsky was reading about as a young kid were, I would guess, pretty different from the kinds of things you and I were reading at that age.
Nuclear power, space travel, asteroid mining, the idea that the solar system could support a lot more than the number of people currently on Earth.
How old were you when you were getting into that book?
I think 9 years old.
Okay, that's pretty young to be getting into those sorts of topics.
I mean, I think I turned out okay.
By 11, he'd moved on to even more serious stuff.
Ideas like, can you scan an entire human brain and move the person into a computer? Can you build artificial intelligence?
And this, he realized, this is what he was into.
So from 16, I knew that was what I was going to be spending my life doing.
Yudkowsky was coming of age in the late 90s, just as the internet was taking off, and spending most of his time arguing with people on online forums and email threads. And that's when he first started to get noticed.
He mostly emerged from the internet. Right, from the very early internet. That's how I think of him.
Tom Chivers is a journalist. He's written a book about Yudkowsky and his ideas. And there was this one essay Yudkowsky wrote when he was just 17 years old that caught a lot of attention. It was full of teenage angst about the state of the world.
I've got the quote here. Like, I have had it. I have had it with crack houses, dictatorships, torture chambers, disease, old age, spinal paralysis, and world hunger. I have had it with a planetary death rate of 150,000 sentient beings per day. I've had it with this planet. I've had it with mortality. None of this is necessary. We can end this.
And he said, there was a solution. One day soon, humanity would create super intelligent AI.
His point is, if you build something really, really clever, then it can solve these problems. The problems we have are the problems of humans not being clever enough to solve their own problems.
That was what I hoped for. Everyone lives happily ever after, but literally ever after, up until the universe ends, and I wasn't too sure about us not figuring out a way to get out of that.
Super intelligent AI isn't ChatGPT. It's not AI that can recognize a face or see cancer. It's something that can do everything we can, think faster than us, knows more, knows everything every human who's ever lived has known. It would literally be beyond our comprehension. Like an ant trying to understand an iPhone.
A human being thinks for 100 years and then dies. What if you have thought for 10,000 years? What if you have read everything that's ever been written? And then some. This is the notion of superintelligence.
Yudkowsky, again just 17 years old, was writing these essays and discussing them online with philosophers, professors, big-time thinkers, and holding his own. He started gaining a following and persuaded donors to give him money to start an institute dedicated to solving all the world's problems by bringing superintelligence to life. Over the next 6 years, he's doing this work and begins to engage with another school of thought, one that says, actually, superintelligence wouldn't save humanity. It wouldn't usher in some utopia. It would be dangerous. And these arguments that at first he dismissed, now they start to nag at him.
As a young lad, I thought that if you built something very smart, it would automatically be very wise and thence very moral. But what if superintelligence isn't automatically nice? And as a result of staring at that issue, my entire false belief that very smart and capable systems are automatically nice, started to fall apart.
In other words, the AI he thought would save us all was much more likely, in fact, logically certain, to kill everybody instead. So in 2003, Yudkowsky decides he's going to turn his life's work around. He's no longer going to focus on trying to bring super intelligent AI into existence. Now he's going to try to convince the world
this stuff shouldn't exist. And he writes this collection of essays and blog posts that are collectively longer than War and Peace. They're just short of the length of the Bible. And they come to be called the sequences. The core of Yudkowsky's message wasn't just that super intelligent AI won't be nice. It won't be nice, but it won't be cruel or evil either.
Oh God, some machines are starting to take over.
He says, you need to forget everything you think you know about killer AI. Forget about the Terminator.
Why are they killing everyone?
Destroy any possible threat to Skynet.
This won't be a scenario where the AI becomes conscious, decides it doesn't want to be ruled over by humans, and launch a war against us. Great movies, but apparently very inaccurate depiction of the AI apocalypse.
If you're going to use a film for the analogy, the film you should use is Disney's Fantasia.
The Mickey Mouse movie.
Yeah, the Mickey Mouse movie.
If you haven't seen Fantasia, it's this old Disney movie. Mickey, as in the mouse, is some kind of trainee wizard, and one of his jobs is to fill a cauldron with water.
But that's hard work, and it's boring, and it takes a long time.
So Mickey enchants a broom and asks it to take some buckets and fill up the cauldron instead.
And then the broom grows little arms, it grabs a bucket in each arm and waddles off to the well.
A few hours later, the castle is completely flooded. The broom had followed Mickey's instructions perfectly, filled up the cauldron. But once it was full, it just kept going. For Yudkowsky, the key thing here is that the broom wasn't evil. The broom had no opinions. It was just doing what Mickey asked. What Mickey asked was the problem. When he said, fill up the cauldron, he expected the broom to understand all of these unspoken nuances. Like, at some point, you'll need to stop. If the room starts flooding, there's a problem. But why would a broom know that? The broom just does exactly what you tell it. And so would an AI.
Just seems mad. But it's because we have human brains with human values and human philosophies and, you know, all these things, which it simply doesn't have. So it's sort of our model of human wisdom does not apply to it. The sort of fundamental idea of AI, of AI risk, is that the AI will do exactly what you tell it to do, and that it can only do exactly what you tell it to, but what you tell it to do is not what you want it to do.
The point is, you can't just tell an AI what you want it to do. You need to tell it all the things it shouldn't do to achieve that goal. And things can very quickly get out of control. Let's take another domestic chore. Say you build a super smart, all capable AI robot and say, clean my house. Simple. And at first it does. It sweeps up, it mops the floors. And then it decides an even better way to achieve this goal would be to have thousands of versions of itself spread out across the whole house, cleaning all day, every day. So much cleaning that eventually, you can't even live in your house anymore because every surface is being cleaned all the time. You just have to leave, lock the door, and find somewhere else to live. But that's not the end of it. At some point, this robot realizes, at this rate, the world is going to run out of cleaning products. And if that happens, it can't achieve its goal. So it goes and strips the planet's resources and puts them all into creating a nearly endless supply of Mr. Muscle. And the last evidence of human civilization on this Earth, the last thing standing, is your astonishingly clean house. I know, this all sounds a bit mad, but the idea here is, it's really hard to align what you want with what AI actually does. And once you create something incredibly smart, incredibly powerful, you'd only get one go at getting it right. So maybe you're thinking, okay, that's not great, but why don't we just give it an off switch? If the AI starts to get a bit crazy, pull the plug, turn it off. But Eliezer and others say, no, that wouldn't work.
It is very hard to fulfill your goals if you're switched off. So If the AI has reason to think that you will be coming to switch it off, then it will take steps to avoid that. If I decided that you were dangerous and I should switch you off, you would try and resist me from resist my doing that, I imagine. And for the same reasons, an AI would try and resist me switching it off if I thought it was going to be dangerous, and it would be better at doing it than you are.
The point is here, if you're in a position where this thing's trying to outsmart you, it's going to outsmart you. I mean, by definition, it's super intelligent.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, maybe its next step is to make copies of itself around the internet. If it's really, really powerful and has control of nuclear codes, maybe its next step is to nuke everybody.
Okay, so you can't count on being able to turn it off. But everything Tom just said assumes that the AI is somehow connected to the real world. It wouldn't be able to copy itself to the internet or access the nuclear codes if you just kind of stick it in a box. Put this Oracle-like superintelligence on a single computer, lock it in a room, and disconnect it from the internet. And if you want its help in solving a problem, you just go into the room and have a conversation with it. Sort it, right? Apparently not.
There's a danger in just talking to a thing that understands you far better than you understand yourself.
His argument here boils down to one question. Do you really think the smartest entity that's ever existed couldn't convince you, manipulate you, into setting it free in the world? Really?
And it's not like there's a sort of mechanical, lifeless mind trapped in a computer. It's like there's an alien civilization that thinks 1,000 times faster than Earth, trapped inside a computer. If you were in those shoes, how would you get into the real world?
In any case, Eliezer says, the box thing is probably a moot point, because that's not how things are going.
OpenAI does not keep GPT-4 in a box unconnected to the internet. They trained it connected to the internet from the very start because the computers that train things are connected to the internet. And then what was profitable was to connect ChatGPT to the internet and sell it for $20 a month to everyone. You're describing a world where humanity can somehow just decide en masse. This technology is so dangerous that it needs to be kept in a tiny box. We do not have that capability at the moment. We should, but we don't.
I don't know. Maybe all of this sounds a bit far-fetched. But Eliezer says, if you sit down and think about it, you'll see it's all rational. And over the years, a lot of people have taken Eliezer's ideas about how to think rationally about AI, how to think rationally about every problem in the world, very seriously. They spawned a whole movement. People who call themselves rationalists, devoted to the ideas laid out on his website.
It was read by people very much in Silicon Valley or in computer science names who would later be involved in DeepMind or who wrote AI textbooks and things like that. It was an influential thing.
One thing that I find amazing about Eliezer's story is that when he was outlining these ideas, warning the world about AI, AI itself was a bit of a joke, barely able to tell the difference between a dog and a cat. But he was absolutely convinced and worried that much smarter AI was coming. And on that, at least, he turned out to be exactly right.
Yes, there's no person who made these captions. This was machine made. Yes, it's true.
Gradually. And then rapidly.
A computer program has just beaten a nine-dot professional.
Yeah, it's happened once.
With Yudkowsky warning at every step, slow down, this is bad news.
It's that you can actually screw up and the entire human species stands at risk.
Jeffrey Hinton's vision came to life.
Users can now have spoken conversations and have them translated between two languages almost instantly.
Neural networks started to work.
Alexa, what do you do?
I can play music, answer questions, get the news and weather.
Powerful AI systems, capable of deep learning, and like the human brain, too complex for us to understand. Black boxes. While Eliezer watched on in horror. Eliezer, in the years that you were writing about these topics, gaining followers and influence, we also started to see significant progress when it came to AI, especially with neural networks. What was it like for you to watch the field start to progress?
Pretty horrible. Deep learning is pretty much a worst case scenario from the perspective of being able to align or even understand AI systems. That was a death sentence. Back when I was getting into this field, nobody knew that it was going to be giant inscrutable matrices that were going to win all the prizes. But there was still a hope back then that by the time you got to something like ChatGPT, you'd have some idea what it was thinking in there. And that is not what we have. What we have is AI that is, you know, barely a step above how natural selection built humans, completely blindly. We do not have AIs that are built. We have AIs that are grown. And then at that point, it's hard to control because it's hard to understand.
A bit over a year ago, all of a sudden, the world started talking about AI.
And right now, ChatGPT is rattling the AI world.
ChatGPT arrived.
Get ready to laugh, cry, maybe even throw your computer at the window, because the latest AI technology, ChatGPT, is here to shake things up. And just like
AI that could have a conversation, pass the bar exam, discuss the plot of any book, artificial intelligence that actually seemed intelligent.
It is writing better than most of my students write at this point, you know, college freshmen.
And as people started to understand we had entered a new age, Yudkowsky kept trying to raise the alarm, now to much bigger audiences.
I tried to get this very important project started early so we'd be in less of a drastic rush later. I consider myself to have failed. Nobody understands how modern AI
audiences who didn't always know what to make of his apocalyptic message.
That smarter, but that they would, why would they want to go in that direction? Like, that AIs don't have our feelings of sort of envy and jealousy and anger and
but he had one high-profile person who, last May, announced he had come over to Yudkowsky's way of thinking.
Jeffrey Hinton says he wants to be free to talk about the possible dangers of technology that he helped to develop.
Not about everything, but about the bigger point, that AI could be, and in fact was likely to be, extremely dangerous.
Given the rate of progress, we expect things to get better quite fast, so we need to worry about that.
And in the months since then, fears around AI have become just as prominent as hopes of what it could one day do.
We face a genuine inflection point in history. One of those moments where the decisions we make in the very near term are going to set the course for the next decades.
The Biden White House in October issued a major executive order that will force the biggest AI companies to share safety data with the government before they release their models to the public. A few months ago, Rishi Sunak gathered global leaders at a summit dedicated to the existential risks of AI.
Get this wrong, and AI could make it easier to build chemical or biological weapons. Terrorist groups could use AI to spread fear and destruction on an even greater scale. Criminals could exploit AI for cyber attacks, disinformation, fraud, or even child sexual abuse. And in the most unlikely but extreme cases, there is even the risk that humanity could lose control of AI completely.
Last year was this like watershed year in AI safety. The things you'd been talking about for two decades suddenly became mainstream. Was that gratifying to you as someone who had advocated for those issues, or not gratifying at all?
It is not particularly gratifying in the way that I think you're thinking. Like, people who need the gratification of seeing others agree with them will not go into a field like AI alignment and work on it, being largely ignored for 20 years. They will pick something that delivers more of that gratification earlier. I have a low need for that form of gratification. It was, in a way, humbling, because I had written off humanity's response to this issue. I thought that everybody was going to just sort of never think about it or talk about it sensibly at all, the way that people in Silicon Valley and the companies building these things had never thought about it at all. I thought that humanity was going to do worse than Silicon Valley. Humanity did better. And when you're cynical and you're wrong, I think that's meant to be a bit humbling.
For Yudkowsky, this moment that his ideas broke through to the mainstream, it was bittersweet, because he had come to the conclusion that by now, it was too late. He thinks we've nearly run out of time. He says It's hard to say when AI might reach a level when it's as smart as a human.
I have a sense that that our current remaining timeline looks more like 5 years than 50 years.
But once it does reach that point, he says it won't stay there for long.
Superintelligence, at the very least, should be better than any human at building the next generation of AI.
And then that improved version will improve itself again and again and again and again. An intelligence explosion. Yudkowsky says we can avoid this. There is a way. And that is, shut it down. Pause all AI development right now. Sign treaties, pass laws, drop bombs on rogue data centers if you need to. Whatever it takes.
Do you have any hope that we will survive this? That we will develop superintelligent AI in a way that does not result in the worst outcome for humanity?
Yeah, it's that we back off and don't do it. And the time to do that is running out as we build more chip factories, as the technology proliferates. But if we woke up tomorrow and just like decided we'd rather not die this way, we could do it. You say nobody's allowed to train something more powerful than GPT-4. Humanity could decide not to die and it would not be that hard. The difficulty is that people don't realize they're about to die. If people knew that, we could just stop. It wouldn't be trivial, but we could.
Coming up, don't panic. There are other views of how this might all play out. Maybe rather than AI killing us all, it could be really good.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
After speaking to Eliezer Yudkowsky, we were terrified. And throughout this series, whenever we've hit a brick wall, come across some idea we can't untangle, there's one person we've gone to for advice. The Guardian's UK technology editor, Alex Hearn. For most of the time we've been working on this series, he's been on paternity leave. But we told him there's something we really need to ask him. Are we all gonna die?
No.
That's reassuring.
Yeah. He says, well, I say not necessarily. It's not the total dismissal that you might hope. I think his fears are worth taking seriously. I don't think it is imminent, and I don't think it's guaranteed.
So where do you stop short of going all the way with him? What is it that gives you hope that maybe this scenario he's laying out is not exactly how it's going to play out?
I think the stuff that stops me short is just that ultimately, for the everyone's going to die end, for the proper doomerism argument, there is still an element of, if I'm being mean, I say magical thinking. And sometimes those things involve like it will engineer a nanovirus and seize 3D printers around the world and distribute an AI engineered death bot that takes out the whole of the human race. And that sort of thing isn't possible based on what we know about biology and physics. There are, we think, limits to what you can achieve through pure reason alone. And that is a very real limit on what sort of a superintelligence can do out of nowhere. I think there are lesser versions of the existential risk that I take more seriously. The big one is this idea of it being so good that we slave ourselves to its power voluntarily, that we wake up in 10 or 20 years' time and we realize that all meaningful power in the world has been effectively voluntarily devolved to one or a number of AI systems. Because, you know, if you as the prime minister of a small or medium-sized country don't let the AI tell you exactly what to do, then your country's outcompeted. If you as the CEO of a business don't hand over almost all your decision-making power to an AI, then your business is outcompeted. Like, that's not an existential risk in the classical sense of things, but it's what I worry about if these systems get too good.
So for you, in the short term, the concern is less the end of humanity in some extraordinary explosion of intelligence. It's the threats that seem more foreseeable. AI taking control of our workplaces, of our personal relationships, dictating the way that we live our lives.
And even taking is perhaps the wrong word, right? Being handed control of that. Because if you create a tool that is that good at doing the jobs it's handed, then not using that tool becomes ridiculous.
Alex told me that a lot of this kind of conversation about whether AI will be nice or mean, good or bad, it's too simple. It all hinges on another question, and that's how intelligent will this stuff end up being? Whether AI will be super smart, all-powerful, the stuff of Yudkowsky's nightmares, or maybe something less than that.
What we get are tools that are tremendously useful, perhaps even transformatively useful, but not changing society in a way that is different from how the railroad, internet, and electricity change society.
Worth noting here, even the lower end scenario for Alex is that AI is as transformative as electricity.
And that's bad enough that we destroy our healthy media ecosystem, that we destroy any sense that you can trust anything that you hear that isn't from the mouth of someone you already trust. That's one where we have mass unemployment as huge swathes of easily automatable jobs get removed, cut down in importance. That's a world that is the Industrial Revolution, but more so and faster.
But lots of people argue that as well as causing upheaval, this kind of AI, powerful but not super intelligent, could be a really good thing for the world.
Actually, that's where I sit. That's the world where things get slightly better, faster than they used to, forever. And it is because that's how the world has worked. In general, the path of the last 200-300 years of humanity has been that while there may be transition problems, that life has got and continues to get overall better for lots and lots of people based in large part on technological improvement, I wouldn't want to live in the Britain of 50 years ago, really, actually. Like, just differences in things like child mortality. My daughter has Down syndrome. The difference in the quality of life for her now versus 50 years ago is unspeakable. There's just wild improvement. And I think that has to be your default for what technology can do.
What kind of world do you think, one that is dominated by this kind of powerful but not super intelligent AI, will actually look like?
I think you can start looking through almost every segment of society and go, okay, well, what happens if everyone who works here is able to think to the best of their ability for 8 hours a day with a full team of personal assistants and research assistants beside them, right? That's a world where scientific research, say, gets supercharged. If you have every biochemist, every geneticist, every industrial chemist, all of them working through the absolute top of their ability, then suddenly perhaps science becomes easier or faster or more efficient. And it's not just science, right? It's every segment of society where you could have that. The world is full of people not working to their full potential because we are tired, we are unsupported, we are fuzzy-headed.
Alex reckons in this scenario, AI would touch just about every aspect of the way we live and just make it better. In education, a personalized tutor for every child. On the environment, finding ways to make renewable energy even more efficient, maybe even discovering nuclear fusion, a source of unlimited clean energy. On health, finding new antibiotics, predicting the structure of every known protein, both of which, by the way, AI has already done. And then the thing Alex says we should really keep an eye on this year, which is the fusion of AI and robotics.
Just days before we recorded this, a company called Figure published a video of an OpenAI-powered humanoid robot that it's been working on.
Hey, Figure One, what do you see right now?
I see a red apple on a plate in the center of the table, a drying rack with cups and a plate, and you standing nearby with your hand on the table.
Great. Can I have something to eat?
It is a machine that can be instructed with normal words to do everyday domestic tasks, can explain what it's doing and why it's doing it.
The dishes on the table, like that plate and cup, are likely to go into the drying rack next.
Great. Can you put them there?
I mean, come on. It is science fiction. Of course. And it's easy to see the ways that could lead to a terrifying world, but I don't think it's wildly optimistic to think that would be nice to have, wouldn't it?
All right, so how do you think you did?
I think I did pretty well. The apple found its new owner, the trash is gone, and the tableware is right where it belongs.
If you can start getting help from robotic systems, then there is an optimistic world there, one where people like my great-grandmother, who don't need round-the-clock care to survive, but need round-the-clock care to thrive, she's not going to be stuck alone, deprived of her one human contact. She's still going to be going to see her friends, to play bridge, to go on social calls. But she's also no longer going to be at risk of forgetting to eat. She's no longer going to be at risk of falling over and having no ability to summon help for a day or two. And that being opened up to everyone who needs it, I'm really optimistic that would be the sort of thing that can transformatively change lives for literally millions of people. And that's one use of one technology that this revolution is creating, right? I genuinely think even with the technology that exists today, it is already getting hard to come up with people whose lives couldn't in some way be helped by this. And that's a staggering precipice to be standing on the edge of.
How much power do you think we have as people, as citizens, over the way AI ends up shaping our lives? How much of it is down to politics and the way that we choose to order our societies?
I think we have a lot of power. I think ultimately we can order society and go, you know what, actually, we're not going to allow ubiquitous facial recognition and behavioral monitoring. We're not going to become an authoritarian society. The EU has just passed laws that allow it to poke and prod frontier AI models independently of their developers. That's huge. That means that there will be an independent safety check. You no longer have to trust that OpenAI or Google or Microsoft are doing this stuff well. You have a government putting a second pair of eyes on things.
Alex, one of the things this series has been about is the realization that we've crossed from a before into an after, into this world where machines can learn on their own. And that is an extraordinary and profound transformation. For people who are trying to understand what it all means for them, where they might fit into it, what would you tell them?
I would say, if you are dipping your toe into the world, sort of persist. It's an incredible thing that has been created, and it's going to get better. I guess there is a bit of fatalism in that if you don't embrace what it can do for you, then you're just going to be affected by what it's doing for others. And kind of the only way you can seize agency in this is by seizing it and not just burying your head in the sand and hoping the world won't change. Because I think it's going to.
Thanks very much to Alex Hearn, The Guardian's UK technology editor. You can read more from him by signing up to his newsletter called Techscape. Thanks very much also to Tom Chivers. His book is called The Rationalist's Guide to the Galaxy, and it's available right now. Black Box is produced by Alex Atack. The executive producer is Josh Kelly. The commissioning editor is Nicole Jackson. Original music and sound design by Rudy Zagadlo. The music supervisor is Max Sanderson. This series took us 6 months to make, and we're so glad we can bring it to you for free. If you'd like to support projects like this one, consider becoming a supporter of The Guardian, which you can do by going to support.theguardian.com. And otherwise, if you enjoyed this series, if you thought it was worthwhile, please do leave us a rating and a review. It'll help other people find us. Black Box will return sometime in the future.
This is The Guardian.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's AURA.com/safety.